is a wonderful passage from Emerson, which seems to me to come closer to capturing Frank Lloyd Wright than any other, in which he says, every spirit builds itself a house, and beyond its house a world, and beyond its world a heaven. Know then that the world exists for you. Build therefore your own world. And that vision of the romantic genius, the artist, taking the world and reinventing it, making it in its own right, following that personal idiosyncratic vision, is utterly what Frank Lloyd Wright is about.
There are some people, and I'm one of them, who suspect that there is no better world than this lousy and crooked one we see all around us.
X-Tree, read all about it. Car bursts into flame on city street as detective passes by. X-Tree, X-Tree, strange disappearance of continent of Australia.
Maybe there's one or two optimists who might argue the matter. Yeah, sure. And maybe there's one or two saints left. And maybe even one or two heroes. And maybe there really is a Santa Claus. And maybe the Easter Bunny ain't labeled Friar down at the Mini Super. But you find them for me, pal. And I'll lay you several to one that you just plain made them up. Hey, little guy. Got the night edition of the National Toilet?
Here you go, Nick. Hot off the presses, whatever that means. Filled with murder and blackmail and dope and betrayal and the disappearance of an entire continent under mysterious circumstances. And be sure to read the comics. I laugh myself silly.
Thanks, Shorty.
I'm not Shorty. Shorty was a little guy. Shorty got caught under his own car the other day. They had to scrape the road to come up with enough to charge his family for the deluxe coffin.
See what I mean? Hell, the kind of goody-goodies who believe there is some better world than this, they're so few that they're what you'd have to call statistically irrelevant. But now that I think about it, so am I statistically irrelevant, and so are you. And that, my friend, is as true as the half-eaten facts of life on a cheap blue plate with a cigarette stuffed out in the cold, congealed gravy.
Mary Edith Burrell, Peter's ex-wife, had flown out from Asheville, North Carolina, to join his daughter Lily in caring for him. And when we talked back in L.A., she told me a completely unbelievable story. Peter's sister Wendy Kleckner and her husband had flown down from San Francisco to generously help with estate issues. It seems that Bergman, who had lectured on economics at Yale with a young George W. Bush napping in the back row, was not a whiz at managing his own funds. He had also not seen a doctor for quite a while and hadn't paid his taxes for 3 years. So Mary Edith was driving to the mortuary, where she'd arranged for a viewing of Peter's remains before cremation, which, by the way, did not very much please his Orthodox Jewish sister. En route, Mary Edith called the place to make sure they were ready. But the grief counselor who answered said, "Bergman? Oh, he's not here." Concerned, she called the hospital, and they too said, "No, he's not here." She became even more upset, prompting Wendy to ask, "What's going on?" "Your brother is fucking with me from beyond the grave," Mary Edith explained. "And he's answering the question, how can you be in two places at once when you're not anywhere at all?" Naturally, there had been a bureaucratic screw-up, and she discovered that Peter, who should have been at the mortuary, was still hanging out in the hospital morgue. When my co-writer Brad listened to Mary Edith repeat this story at his second memorial at the Electric Lodge in Venice, it seemed Peter was up to his old tricks again. Brad was seated directly under a skylight covered with a tarpaulin, and during Mary Edith's eulogy, a strong wind kept lifting up the edge of the tarp, causing sunlight to flash intermittently into his eyes. He turned to a friend seated next to him, pointed up to the flashing sunlight, and whispered, "That's Peter saying, 'Enough already with the stories.'" But what really freaked me out on that day and led to the title of this book was that Firesign patron Gretchen Steiner had ordered fortune cookies for the memorial. The fortunes read Peter Bergman, November 29, 1939, March 9, 2012, along with different Firesign album titles. When I asked her how she came up with the idea, she replied, "Peter showed up in a dream one night and complained that he never got his fortune cookie." "So you were referring to our involvement in the Golden Dragon Massacre?" I asked. And then, astonishingly, she revealed to me that she'd never heard about the Chinatown gangland shooting. Ye gods! Thanks, Pete, for the shout-out, which is always better than a shootout.
I want my story heard because, ironically, I believe Picasso was right. I believe we could paint a better world if we learned how to see it from all perspectives, as many perspectives as we possibly could, because diversity is strength. Difference is a teacher. Fear difference, you learn nothing. Picasso's mistake was his arrogance. He assumed he could represent all of the perspectives, and our mistake was to invalidate the perspective of a 17-year-old girl because we believed her potential was never going to equal his. Hindsight is a gift. Can you stop wasting my time? A 17-year-old girl is just never, ever, ever in her prime. Ever! I am in my prime! Would you test your strength out on me? There is no way anyone would dare test their strength out on me, because you all know there is nothing stronger than a broken woman who has rebuilt herself. To the men in the room who feel I may have been persecuting you this evening, well spotted. That's pretty much what I've done there. But this is theatre, fellas. I've given you an hour, a taste. I have lived a life. The damage done to me is real and debilitating. I will never flourish. But this is why I must quit comedy, because the only way I can tell my truth and put tension in the room is with anger. And I am angry, and I believe I've got every right to be angry. But what I don't have a right to do is to spread anger. I don't. Because anger, much like laughter, can connect a room full of strangers like nothing else. But anger, even if it's connected to laughter, will not relieve tension, because anger is a tension. It is a toxic, infectious tension, and it knows no other purpose than to spread blind hatred, and I want no part of it, because I take my freedom of speech as a responsibility, and just because I can position myself as a victim does not make my anger constructive. It never is constructive. Laughter is not our medicine. Stories hold our cure. Laughter is just the honey that sweetens the bitter medicine. I don't want to unite you with laughter or anger. I just needed my story heard, my story felt and understood by individuals with minds of their own. Because like it or not, your story is my story, and my story is your story. I just don't have the strength to take care of my story anymore. I don't want my story defined by anger. All I can ask is just please help me take care of my story. Do you know why we have the sunflowers? It's not because Vincent van Gogh suffered. It's because Vincent van Gogh had a brother who loved him. Through all the pain, he had a tether, a connection to the world. And that is the focus of the story we need. Connection. Thank you.
Dear friend, could you imagine a world without access to reading, learning, to books? At 21, I was forced into Poland's World War II ghetto, where being caught reading anything forbidden by the Nazis meant at best hard labor, at worst death. There I conducted a clandestine school offering Jewish children a chance at the essential education denied them by their captors. But I soon came to feel that teaching these sensitive young souls Latin and mathematics was cheating them of something far more essential. What they needed wasn't dry information, but hope. The kind that comes from being transported into the dream world of possibility. One day, as if guessing my thoughts, one girl beseeched me, "Could you please tell us a book? Please?" I had spent the previous night reading Gone with the Wind in Polish translation, one of a few smuggled books circulated among trustworthy people via an underground channel, on their word of honor to read it only at night in secret. No one was allowed to keep a book over longer than one night. That way, if reported, the book would have already changed hands by the time the searches arrived. I had read Gone with the Wind from dusk until dawn, and it still illuminated my own dream world. So I invited these young dreamers to join me. As I told them the book, they shared the loves and trials of Red Butler and Scarlett O'Hara, of Ashley and Melanie Lucas. For that magical hour, we had escaped into a world not of murder, but of manners and hospitality. All the children's faces had grown animated with new vitality. A knock at the door shattered our shared dream world. As the class silently exited, a pale green-eyed girl turned to me with a tearful smile. "Thank you so very much for this journey into another world. Could we please do it again soon?" I promised we would, although I doubted we would have many more chances. She put her arms around me and I whispered, "So long, Scarlett. I think I would rather be Melanie," she answered, although Scarlett must have been so much more beautiful. As events in the ghetto took their course, most of my fellow dreamers fell victims to the Nazis. Of the 22 pupils in my secret school, only 4 girls survived the Holocaust. The pale green-eyed girl was one of them. Many years later, I was finally able to locate her, and we met in New York. One of my life's greatest rewards will remain the memory of our meeting when she introduced me to her husband as the source of my hopes and my dreams in times of total deprivation and dehumanization. There are times when dreams sustain us more than facts. To read a book and surrender to a story is to keep our very humanity alive. Sincerely, Helen Fagan.
Best review I ever read on the Firesound Theater was in Rolling Stone, when a guy wrote in to say that he would be listening to us in the rice paddies in Vietnam with the bullets flying over his head on his earphones. It was the only thing that kept him sane. I liked that review because I got to tell you, the Firesound Theater, as I see it, can't speak for all four of the guys, but I think it's very true, were a platoon of guerrillas from 1968 to 1973. We fought the Holocaust in Vietnam, and we won. And we all are the walking wounded because of it. We are veterans. We are truly Vietnam veterans. People didn't spit on us because we spat first. But we were guerrillas, and I honor us for that. I think we ought to get ribbons, small ribbons that we could wear in the lapels of our tank tops.
One of the most important memories of being with Pete had nothing to do with our performing. We were on the road early in our career when Cheech and Chong were doing a show nearby, and we went to see them. It was a very young audience, and Cheech and Chong, playing at being stoned and dim, were making outrageous fun of authority figures. The audience was shocked and thrilled at the same time that somebody like them could actually be mocking the closed minds of their parents, teachers, and law enforcement. Firesign had been doing that from the beginning. And we recognize that whether you're making drug jokes or dick jokes or creating albums so complex that you needed to listen to them multiple times, comedy can do more than just make you laugh. It can make you reconsider. It can make you resist. It can make you essentially change what you believe and who you are. And in that process, change your assumption about your role in the simultaneously beautiful and inexplicable world around you. And the funny part is, you don't have to be a comedian to do it. You just have to have a sense of humor. You're blessed if you do. And listen carefully to your own amusing muse, because the next chapter is up to you.
Yeah.